ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Twelfth chapter, text number 39. Mohini Murti bewilders Lord Shiva.
Ko nu ko nu me titaren mayam. Ko nu me titaren mayam. Vishaktastvadrite puman. Vishaktastvadrite puman. Tamstan visrijatim bhavan. Tamstan visrijatim bhavan. Dustaramakritatmabhi. Dustaramakritatmabhi.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. My dear Lord Shambhu, who within this material world but you can surpass my illusory energy? People are generally attached to sense enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Indeed, the influence of material nature is very difficult for them to surmount. Purport. Of the three chief demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar, all but Vishnu are under the influence of Maya. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are described as Mayi, which means under Maya's influence. But even though Lord Shiva associates with Maya, he is not influenced. The living entities are affected by Maya. But although Lord Shiva apparently associates with Maya, he is not affected. In other words, all living entities within this material world, except Lord Shiva, are swayed by Maya. Lord Shiva is therefore neither Vishnu Tattva nor Jiva Tattva. He is between the two. We're very happy and grateful to be here today amongst all of you by the instructions of superiors, Govinda Prabhu, and the blessings of the Vaishnavas. We're trying to say something on Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Shiva was not disturbed after his bewilderment by Mohini Murti. He did not try to cover it up. When we commit mistakes, our general reaction is, oh, it didn't happen. It wasn't me. I didn't do it. Or I was a victim of circumstances, meaning it's not my fault. I may have done it, but actually, it's not because of me, but I was just, swayed by the circumstances. So we do not take responsibility. But Lord Shiva, he is Vaishnavanam Yatak Shambhu. He's our predecessor. He's our worshipful superior, the most exemplary Vaishnav. And as such, he's embodying, he's exemplifying what is sincerity. That means he takes responsibility. He's not saying it didn't happen. Nobody saw it. He's not saying it was not my fault because, hey, after all, this was Vishnu's, Krishna's own internal potency. So, anybody, that would happen to anybody. But he was, in fact, very happy. He was very proud. He was very grateful for Krishna to bewilder him in such a way. So he accepted responsibility. Nowadays, when we are trying to present Krishna consciousness to the living entities of this world, they are looking for sincerity. Because to be sincere is something very rare. When you walk into that store and you get that initial attention of the salesperson or of the waiter, you can see that usually it's very superficial and it's very short-lived. It doesn't last very long. As soon as you sat down and you've made your orders, usually they know, okay, he's going to stay. So he will have to pay. So now we don't really care so much. So sincerity is a very rare quality in this world. So when people are coming to the Krishna consciousness movement or they're meeting devotees in any situation in life, they are looking for sincerity, because sincerity is a very rare quality. And that means, like in the case of Lord Shiva, that one is ready to accept responsibility for one's activities, for one's actions, even if they have not been so glorious, even if they have not been so proper. And Lord Shiva also, one time, he was sitting in Kailash, and Parvati was on his lap, and there was a lot of sages around. And Lord Shiva was speaking to them about the glories of the Lord, his worshipful Lord. And Chitraketu Maharaj was flying by in his airplane, and he saw this, and he just started to chuckle. He just thought it's very funny. Here is Shiva, and he's speaking to all these ascetics and renounced personalities about the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But at the same time, he's got his wife on his lap. So he thought, this is very funny. And not only did he chuckle, but he also made some comments, some remarks, which Lord Shiva did not mind, because he understood Chitraketu Maharaj. And he thought, yes, actually, it is funny. So he did not take it in a bad way. But Parvati, she did not think this very amusing. So she cursed Chitraketu to fall down and become a demon in the material world. So what did Chitraketu Maharaj do? He was very powerful. After all, he was a great king, he's a great devotee. He's flying there with his airplane, with all his queens. So he's a very illustrious personality. So he could just counter-curse her or done something to nullify or to neutralize that curse. But no, when he saw that he had acted in an improper way, or it was perceived by somebody else to be improper, he immediately took responsibility. He stepped down from his airplane, he bowed down, he touched the feet of Parvati, he begged forgiveness, and he accepted the curse on his head. So this is the position of a Vaishnava, of a devotee. And that's why Lord Shiva, he commented, Narayana parak sarve nakutas chana bibhati svarga pavarga narakeshu apitulyarta darshana. That just see, Devi, the greatness of the devotees of Vishnu. They may be in heaven, flying in their airplane, or they may be cursed to go down to hell. But still, they're simply interested in worshipping and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So, in our own lives, in our own situation, sometimes it may seem like we're flying in an airplane and everything is wonderful and we are just enjoying the breeze and the scenery. And at other times it seems like we're cast down into very hellish condition and everything is going against us. The entire material energy is working against us. But at the same time, are we able to remember Krishna? Are we able to see this as Krishna's mercy? Not just when we're down, but also when we're up. That is the difficulty. That is the hardship. That's why Kunti Devi, she is praying to the Lord. She says first, Janmaishwarya Shrutashribir Edamanamarak Puman, that in the hearts of people who are absorbed in beauty, in wealth, in great learning and education, the resolute determination to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not arise. So if we are blessed with these four qualities, we have to be very careful that we can actually worship Krishna in a peaceful and in a humble state of mind. Now for myself, it's not so difficult, because I might say, I don't have any of these. So what is there to be proud about? But just that statement is a sign of pride or arrogance. We might say that I do not have anything, but then the spirit in which we say that might be pride personified. So we might be very proud in having so many realizations, in knowing so much, in having done so much. But Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardan. He accepts the essence. So he does not see what is the offering. He sees what is the intent, what is the mood, what is the spirit with which this offering has been prepared and brought to me. So Lord Shiva's mood was a mood of gratefulness. He was very happy that Krishna had bewildered him, that he had been the instrument for showing the Lord's greatness. He was not upset. Oh, why me? Why do I have to be the example, the laughing stock of the entire universe? You know, Mohini Murti was bringing him to all this, the ashrams of the sages, to all the places everybody saw, you know. It was very graphic. Here is Lord Shiva lusting after this beautiful woman. So this was very graphic. But he did not object. He did not say, why me? Why do I have to be the culprit or the person who has to serve as an example? No. He was very happy and he was very glad, for he always appreciates the Lord in whatever form and in whatever way the Lord shows his kindness. So in the same way, are we able to appreciate the Lord's greatness and kindness when he comes in the form of defeat, when he comes in the form of humiliation, when he comes in the form of loss, when he comes in the form of death? Or are we able, are we resentful? Are we disturbed and upset? And we say, no, it's not me. This is the wrong number. Excuse me, you dialed the wrong number. This is the guy next door. My time has not come up yet. I got so many plans. I got so many things to do. Or do we see that this is the loving hand of the Lord delivering us, bringing us closer to the Lord's lotus feet? So sincerity is a very rare quality, a very rare commodity in this world. You can't go to the marketplace and say, I'd like to buy 1 kg of sincerity. Because the price which one has to pay for sincerity is too big. It is too great. Like, you may have people, they may be very intelligent, they may be very learned, very wealthy, very renounced, very advanced, but to sincerely accept defeat and humiliation, that is the sign of a truly great personality, of a truly grateful person. Now, the word sincerity, it comes from Latin, sincerus, which means clean or pure. And it is defined in the dictionary as free from pretense or deceit. And it is proceeding from genuine feelings, not dishonest and not hypocritical, not falsified and unadulterated. So sincerity is the quality people are looking for. When they ask you, are you really sure? Are you really convinced that 10 minutes or that 1 hour talk you just gave now, are you really convinced that this is the truth, that this is going to change my life? Are you really convinced this book you're trying to sell me is going to make a difference? And then they have that look. They look at you. And they have that look, you know, that stare. And there's that moment of truth, that moment of silence, where you hear nothing. And then we introspect and we think, am I actually convinced? Am I sure? Am I convinced about this? Now the point is, if you're not convinced, we cannot convince anybody else. Because people will not listen so much to what we say, but more to what we express. This is saying that your actions are so loud that I can't hear you speak. So they're more observing. The ability to actually listen and understand and reflect and introspect is very much reduced. Nowadays we live in a very visual world. Everything is very much visual. So appearances are lasting, especially first appearances. That's why when they asked Srila Prabhupada, how will we know who are your disciples? He said, when you see a perfect gentleman or a perfect lady, then you know who are my disciples. It's very easy. So that is a sign of sincerity. So to strive for that sincerity, what is the price we have to pay? Trinada pisuni chena tarorivasa hishnuna amane namanadena kirtaniya sadahari. To feel oneself lower than a blade of grass, more humble than a straw in the street, more tolerant than a tree, that is the sign of sincerity, because that means a person is actually in knowledge, actually knows, I am very small, I'm minute, I'm infinitesimal. And as such, I have to take shelter of something great, of something more powerful. Now, Lord Shiva, he was great. He was powerful. His wife is material energy personified. So he's not touched by Maya, because he's his wife. But he was swayed. He was completely bewildered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he accepted it with a grateful, with a sincere, and with an appreciative spirit. So, to striving for humility is our daily quest. And that is why we have been given this wonderful process of sadhana bhakti, where we're bowing down to the Lord and his devotees. We're rendering service. We're chanting the holy names of the Lord. Trying to, in a humble state of mind, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we're grateful in whichever way the Lord's mercy appears to us in our life. When the temple commander comes and taps you on the shoulder and says, Prabhu, the Lord has been very kind to you. He has bestowed upon you some special seva. We don't think, oh, why are you always picking on the little guy? No, we see, this is the Lord's mercy. You have chanted very sincerely, so your prayers have been answered. We have to realize we're performing a very powerful process here. Consciousness creates reality. Whatever we pray for, it will actually happen. We have to be careful what we wish for, what we pray for. Like one time I was in Mayapur and I saw one young person, he had an iPod Nano, those little ones, you know. And I never seen it before and I was intrigued. How is it possible? So small. So just, you know, in my mind I was contemplating. And the next day, Brahma Muhurta Prabhu, my old friend, BBT trustee from Northern Europe, he came and he gave me a gift. He said, this is for you. And I opened it. And what was in there? iPod Nano. We've engraved, you know, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. And it had my name on there. And first, I was very happy. And after that, I was going like, you know, I have to be more careful what I wish for. Because sometimes it goes very fast. Like this morning, I was thinking, oh, I've been now here for a few days. So when are they going to ask me to give Bhagavatam class? Did that ever happen to you? Did that ever happen to you? And then Krishna says, oh, okay. You want to give Bhagavatam class? Okay. So we have to be very careful what we wish for. This process is like a kalpa vriksha, like a wish-fulfilling tree. So whatever wish we put out there, we better be sure that it is actually what we want to do. So that quality of sincerity, we can see it in Srila Prabhupada, who exemplifies sincerity to such a unlimited extent. When he took that boat journey to America with no friends, no support, and he carried on, he persevered. He was working diligently, determinedly to push forward this movement. Even though there was no external signs of actual results, He still carried on. He carried forward this mission. So, and I'd like to speak also about another personality whose life has influenced me very much. When I came to this Krishna consciousness movement, I saw some devotees who were very special, very dear to me. And I was very much moved by their personality, their character, and their behavior. One of them is Rohini Sutta Prabhu. Now, he had once, they distributed, him and Manidhar, they distributed more than 500 books a week. And Srila Prabhupada had given his own silver kartals with engravings to him as a gift. He was meant to come to the Mayapur festival to pick up those kartals as the price of the first distributor. Now, if you're invited to go to the Mayapur festival, and Srila Prabhupada will hand you his own silver kartals with an engraving with your name on it, number one in the world, I'm sure we would make plans to go there. But he didn't go. He stayed back. And when Prabhupada asked why he had not come, why he stayed back, the message was conveyed that he thought it is more important for him to be in the West and to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books than to go to the festival and enjoy the price and the association of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, this is very advanced. So when we were traveling with him, he was like our good uncle, always looking out for us. I remember first time I came, I was 15 years old, so he took me shopping. He bought me my first watch. He bought me clothes. He fed us. He looked that we were all well taken care of. And when we used to go out to distribute books, and that was continuing, even later on, after 10, 15 years, when we were grown up and older men, we always asked him, okay, so are you giving blessings today to distribute books? And he was very magnanimous, very liberal. So then he said, okay, go out, do 100 books. We said, what, only 100 books? I want to do more. He said, okay, 200 books. I said, all right, but then we need your special blessings. So we took his foot and put it on our head. And he very liberally, very magnanimously, he gave the blessing. And because we had great faith in his blessings, we went out and we did it. Somehow. Now, he was not proud or thinking, I can make this happen. And he was also not disturbed. And somebody might say, aren't you a little afraid? You know, they're taking your foot and putting it on your head, on their heads, that you might get in trouble because of that. And his reaction, his mood was that, let me get into trouble. If it helps them in their preaching, then let me suffer the consequences of that. But let them go out and distribute in a very nice way. So he always had that very magnanimous and very giving mood, which was greatly touching. It was very endearing to my heart. Just like sincerity, what does it mean? It means to have, it proceeds from genuine feelings. If we meet a person, what's our impression? What are the feelings which are generated in us? So my feelings were great appreciation, great respect, and great love for the kindness of that personality. A couple of months back, I was in San Francisco, Burlingame, with Vaisheshika Prabhu, one of my mentors and friends. And I was together with him, and we went to the car wash to wash the car. Now, what you do in the U.S. is you step out, and they wash the car for you, and then they clean it inside and out. So we were sitting there on the bench in the sun talking to each other. And next to us was a 45-year-old lady with her dog. And the moment we sat down, Vaisheshika Prabhu turns towards her and says, hello, how are you? Oh, you got such a nice dog. What kind of a dog is that? And the moment he said that, I knew she's going to walk away with a book. If she reacts to what he says, it's too late. If she just smiles, it's too late. And sure enough, she said, oh, this dog is like this and like that and the other thing. And they started talking. And next thing you know it, she walks away with a Bhagavad Gita. Now we might say, I don't care about dogs. I don't like dogs. Huh? What do you do when you see a dog in India? Huh? Hut! Muchi! Get lost! Don't look at my, you know, at my whatever. So, but what he did do? He was appreciative. He showed appreciation. And what happened? This person was able to appreciate Krishna consciousness because he appreciated her dog. Now, if that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. It's like when Srila Prabhupada was in Butler, Pennsylvania. Some devotees ask, why have you been there for 5 months? I mean, nothing was happening. Nothing really manifested. Why didn't you go to New York earlier and started your movement? Srila Prabhupada said, don't ever think I was wasting my time. I was studying the nature of the American people. In fact, he wrote a letter to one of his friends in India saying that tonight I'm going to watch Indian classical dance. Now, I have not seen Indian dance in 40 years. And I'm a sannyasi. I'm not interested in seeing a woman dance. But I'm going to see two things. Number one, how do the American people appreciate our Indian culture and tradition? And number two, what are the social dealings? How are people interacting with each other? What's the different exchanges that are going on? I'm going there to study, to observe this, because I can use this in my preaching. So, this is the example of the pure devotee. Now, we might say, okay, let us go out and study material energy. And then we become bewildered. So, we have to understand our position. We have to understand our minuteness. We have to understand our situation. So, in America, I also went out to try to distribute Chama Srila Prabhupada's books, and we were traveling, and in one occasion, there was a father with about 3 or 4 young kids between 8 and 12 in his car, and they get out of the car, and it was very rambunctious. They were kind of like, yeah, let's go out and see this concert, and everybody was jumping all over the place. So they weren't really connecting to what I was trying to say. They didn't give me the attention. You know how it happens sometimes. You meet somebody, you try to talk to them, but they're busy with their cell phone or with their, you know, whatever they're doing. And then we can either get upset or we can get disappointed or we can just walk away or we can try to act in such a way to catch their attention. So I just thank them. Thank you for being out here and have a nice day. And I walked off. I just told them, you know, we're monks and this and that, we're doing this. But then I saw that there's no response. So I carried on. 10 minutes later, they came walking up to me with a big plastic container full of cherries, strawberries, mango, papaya, all fruit. And the kid said, you said you're a monk? Now, this is from God's garden for you with love. This was their words. And they gave me those fruits. And I said, thank you very much. And I gave him a soft Bhagavad Gita, and I said, this is God's teachings with love for you. Have a nice concert. And they were blown away. They were amazed. Huh? So these type of exchanges can happen every day of our lives. If we have the attitude of showing appreciation, of being grateful, and of seeing the good qualities in the person. Now, depending on cultures and situations, that may manifest in a different way. In America, you may say, nice shoes, nice shirt. If you say that here in India, people will go, what? What are you talking about? Nice shoes? Nice shirt? Like, I made the mistake a couple of days back in Mayapur. I was talking with my accountant, and I got a little excited, so I patted him on the shoulder, you know? And And he had this look like, why are you hitting me, you know? like, what are you doing? And then I went like this. Then he could appreciate, you know? Now, if I do that to Gauranga Prabhu, he will be able to appreciate. Because he has been to other places and he has seen the different social customs. But we cannot be stereotyped. We have to see, what is this person's mindset? What is this person's mood? What is this person's attitude? If a person is feeling sad, if a person is feeling down, and you walk up to that person and you say, great day today, isn't it? Everything wonderful. And they go like, huh? But if you go up to him and you say, yeah, tough day, huh? Not going too great, huh? It's really bad. They go, yeah, yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad, yeah. It's all bad, huh? Like you walk up to any Shudra, you can always lament. You lament, they lament, and everybody appreciates each other, isn't it? Huh? You say it's a tough day and everything's bad and your boss is bad and you're not getting enough money and not getting enough respect. And they think like, you're my friend. You understand my heart. You really know what's going on. And then you give them Krishna consciousness, they'll actually be able to appreciate you. Because you appreciated them. You felt what was in their heart. Huh? If you have a Vaishya and you start speaking philosophy, he goes like, what are you talking about? Huh? But if you ask him, how's business? Did you make your first million today? A big smile comes on their face, you know? He asked me about my business. Huh? So we have to see how to connect with people. Huh? Now, I once asked a spiritual master, what's your strategy for this person or in situations like that? And he said, for persons, I don't have any strategy. I have strategy for projects or like that, but for persons, it's just from the heart. Huh? It's just from the heart. So I just, from the heart, you just see what's on this person's mind. Huh? What does this person need to appreciate Krishna consciousness? Huh? So Lord Shiva saw, okay, an example is being shown, huh? At my expense. Because whatever a great personality does, you know, this goes down in the books. This is recorded for futures sake. He knew that. But he was very happy. Because if he can serve the Lord in showing how powerful the Lord's bewildering energy is, then let me be the person who has to show that example. So how much are we willing to humble ourselves in order to give Krishna consciousness to others? How much are we willing to take the lowly position of extending ourselves beyond the call of duty, showing people gratitude, appreciation, asking them, okay, how is it going today? Huh? How are you feeling? And actually meaning it, not just hello, welcome, and goodbye. Hello, welcome, and goodbye. Hello, welcome, and goodbye. Here, take a book, and now get lost. Huh? And the person will feel like, well, this is like any other exchange I'm having throughout the day. Why should I read this? Why should I take this seriously? But if the devotee asks the person with a genuine, with a sincere feeling, please read this book. It will help you. It will give you great inspiration. They will do it. Why? Because you have asked them to. And because you're a devotee and your desire, your wish is very powerful, because you're following this very powerful process, that's why they will do it. And if we want them to become devotees, believe it or not, many of them will. Just because you want it. Now we should introspect and see, what do I want? Do I want them to become devotees? Oh no, otherwise I have to wait in line even longer, you know. If there would be more people here, then where do we put all these people? But don't worry, you know. There's 7 billion people out there in this world. And there's a lot of places where Krishna consciousness is not yet very established. I was just talking this morning to a friend of mine. and he's in Dominican Republic near Santo Domingo, and he's helping to manage a resort. But he also has a little Govinda's cafe in the town. And after he's done with his job, and he has two kids, after he's done with his job, he goes to the ocean to finish his rounds, do some sadhana, then takes care of the kids, and then he goes to the Govindas to distribute prasadam till 9 or 10 o'clock at night and to preach to people. And I ask him, how can you do all these things together? He says, when I see a person walking in here and appreciating prasadam and appreciating these books and appreciating the process which Srila Prabhupada has given to us, and I see their smile on their face, how their life becomes sublime, how they become changed, I become so energetic. I become so enthused to work like anything to spread this movement. So if you feel that Bombay is getting a little, you know, it's getting a little tight here, there's, you know, too many activities and too many devotees, then I'm sure it can be arranged. You know, there's some places where Krishna consciousness is not yet so strongly established, and arrangement can be made, you know, that can start some center or some project in a different place, in a different location. So we are humbly asking the Vaishnavas for their blessings so we can develop some sincerity, because this is the quality which is attracting people to Krishna consciousness, and this is the quality which is attracting Krishna ultimately. Krishna is very attracted by the sincere prayers and endeavors of his devotees. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any comments? Or?
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. Can you share some of the stories when you were distributed more than 500, 600 or some huge number of Mahabig books in one single day? Could you just give a brief account of that day, how it went?
Basically, I was not concerned about the numbers. I just wanted to do more than Harinamananda. No matter how much he does, I just want to do at least one book more than he does. You know, you can't go out and think I'm going to do 500 or 600 books. It's just your meditation, your motivation is, let me give every person something. Let not one person go by. Let not one person walk away empty-handed. That is the mood. That is the mentality. You get up, you chant your rounds, you take prasadam, and at 7 o'clock in the morning, you start distributing. At a post office where people go to open their P.O. boxes, you know, to take the mail. And you're there for 1 hour, 7 to 8, before they go to the business. Then 8 o'clock, you go to the panwala, because everybody goes to buy the newspaper and the cigarettes in the West. After the post, they go there. So you go there to distribute books there. And then after that, you go to another place. So, and in lunch break, you go in front of the restaurants where people go to have lunch. And you just don't stop distributing till it's 9 o'clock at night. And just full absorption. No other thought than giving everybody a book. Now you might think this is impossible, this is unperceivable. How can one individual give out 3,300 Mahabig books in 1 week, in 6 days, and collect 15, 16 lakhs? This is not doable, right? But we have a good friend in Delhi, Rakesh Oberoi. He goes and he talks to the industrialists. One man bought 35,000 Bhagavad Gitas. One person. Huh? And another friend in Russia, he was going to the mines, to the coal mines, where people are working night shifts. Day and night shifts, three shifts, down, way deep down below. And you know where they come up and take their showers? They're very black when they come out, you know. So in their changing room, they put up a book table with a set of Prabhupada's books. Now these workers, they don't get paid in money so many times because the companies don't always have money. But they made a system that people can just sign up. So when they get signature, then the accounts department will give the money to the devotees so they can get the books. So one devotee was just doing hundreds and hundreds of sets in those places. How it happens, I don't know. It's not. It's just you try to do whatever it takes to please Guru and Krishna. And sometimes there's some other motivations there too, which will get purified eventually. Krishna is using everybody's talents and abilities like that. But actually, the more preaching is happening or the more books are going out, the more you can actually realize that it's not me who is doing this. Because it's not possible to actually do this, materially speaking. Sometimes you just see a person far away and you say, hey you, come here, take this. Like you must know when you preach. Sometimes you just say one word and the person is like electrified. I've seen it. Then you touch them. Then you... Why? Because that concentration is there. Let me try to connect this person with Krishna. It's a very deep meditation. And one puts everything else aside. Everything else has to be out of the mind. Single-minded. Ekeha Kurunandana. Not Bahushaka. Just one thing. Nothing else in the mind. But that one thing. Then the problem comes. What happens when we stop distributing books? What happens when we stop preaching? What do we do in the rest of our time? That's the challenge. Once you're on the battlefield, it's do or die. It's swim or sink. But once we're not there, then what do we do then? What is our focus? What is our absorption in Krishna Katha? That is the challenge. Any other points? Thank you very much, O Gaurishrila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.